It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Almost uniformly, police chiefs and law enforcement officials are very supportive because the critical point in policing is when you can turn investigations into convictions. And that's where this comes in as really handy. And even in Prince William County, I actually grew up in Prince William County, but in the Manassas-Prince William County area, which was, you know, kind of became infamous over the past year and a half about their crackdown on immigrants, even Prince William County passed an ordinance that did this same thing. And what we're trying to do with this law is make it uniform across the state so that no one has to be afraid about what town exactly they live in. They know that they can cooperate with the police and report these criminals so we can get them off the street without having their immigration status checked.
Ali Farouk, policy analyst with the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, highlights housing and immigrant issues before the General Assembly and why asking victims and witnesses of crime about their immigration status is bad policy and bad police work. And if you ever wondered how free civil legal aid gets funded, you'll find out during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 34, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR.
Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around, turn me around.
And now, this week's news you can use. A mortgage foreclosure rescue service which claimed that, for a $1,200 fee, they would stop foreclosure and save consumers' homes has settled Federal Trade Commission charges it violated federal law. Many consumers who paid the company, Florida-based Mortgage Foreclosure Solutions, Inc., ultimately lost their homes to foreclosure, and others avoided foreclosure only through their own efforts. Under a federal court settlement, the company is barred from claiming that any home mortgage foreclosure can or will be stopped, postponed, or prevented, or from claiming an ability to help all consumers, regardless of their individual circumstances. The settlement imposes a judgment of almost $1.2 million. However, all but about $8,300 has been suspended based on the company's inability to pay. The full judgment will be imposed if the company is found to have misrepresented their financial condition. In other news, as the unemployment rate in Virginia is rising steadily, so are the number of claims for unemployment compensation. To further complicate this bad situation, the Virginia Employment Commission, or VEC, has reduced staff and closed local offices, including 2 out of 3 in the metropolitan Richmond area. The remaining office at 8093 Elm Drive in Mechanicsville is 2 miles from a bus line, but is still swamped with claimants. The VEC urges applicants to apply for and maintain their claims through the Internet, but the notice provided about these requirements is virtually nil. The customer service toll-free line, 1-866-832-2363, has had heavy call volume for months and often is completely inaccessible. However, help may be on the way. The Unemployment Insurance Modernization Act is part of the economic stimulus package being considered by Congress. If passed, it would provide states with an immediate additional $500 million in administrative funding to start arriving in early March. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is five-day pay or quit notice. A five-day pay or quit notice is a written notice your landlord must give you if your landlord wants to evict you for not paying rent. The written notice asks you to either move or to pay rent in 5 days. If you pay the rent in 5 days, you get to stay. If you don't pay the rent in 5 days, your landlord can start an unlawful detainer action, also called eviction, in general district court. You don't have to move just because your landlord gives you a 5-day pay or quit notice. Your landlord must wait until after a court order has been issued. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for the weekly question and answer, and we're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Clyde Woody, and I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
Welcome to the show, Clyde. What question do you have for us this week?
Yes, Marty, I'd like to know, how is legal aid funded?
In other words, where does the money come to fund legal aid and pay all the cost of doing it here?
Yes, this is correct.
Okay, well, as you know, Clyde, legal aid is free for low-income people who have civil, non-criminal legal problems. We don't charge our clients at all. So the question becomes, well, where does the money come from? It comes from a variety of different sources. One primary area of funding is what's called the Federal Legal Services Corporation, which in turn is funded by Congress, which in turn spends your tax dollars. So every time you pay your income taxes, a very, very small portion of it is paying for legal aid. We also get funding from the State Legal Services Corporation of Virginia, which has three different sources of funding. One is an appropriation from the General Assembly of Virginia. So again, every time you pay your Virginia state taxes, a very small portion of that goes to fund legal aid. We also get some state money from what's called interest on lawyer trust accounts. When lawyers get large sums of money, they put it in an interest-bearing bank account, and that money can generate a lot of interest over a very short period of time, and no one knows whose money that really is, whether it belongs to the lawyer, whether it belongs to a particular client or some other particular client. So that interest just sits there, and lawyers are allowed to donate that to the Virginia Law Foundation, which in turn funds the Legal Services Corporation of Virginia, which in turn funds local legal aid programs like Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. And the third source is what's called the Civil Filing Fee Add-on. Anytime anybody files a civil, non-criminal case in Virginia, there's an add-on of about $5 that again goes to the Virginia Law Foundation that in turn goes to the Legal Services Corporation of Virginia, which in turn funds the local programs. So in summary, we get federal money, we get state money, we also get funded by the United Way of Greater Richmond and Petersburg. We also get funding from various agency areas on aging, the Capital Area Agency on Aging, the Crater Area Agency on Aging. We also get funding from various foundations. The Cameron Foundation is one, and I'm sure there are others that I am omitting. And in addition, we get funding from some local governments. The City of Richmond is our biggest local government funder. And there are other smaller funders from other local governments. And again, I apologize to them if I've omitted their names. But there are a lot of different sources. Last but certainly not least, we get a lot of contributions from law firms in Richmond and elsewhere, as well as from private attorneys. And again, they are far, far too numerous to mention. Overall, we get a little more than $2 million a year in funding, which sounds like a lot. But we are trying to serve 125,000 low-income people in five cities and 15 counties, all the way from Charlottesville and beyond to Petersburg and beyond. So it's a considerable amount of money, but it's an even greater area to serve in a very large number of low-income people. Does that respond to what you asked?
Yes, that sounds adequate, yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being on the show. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about legal aid. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, and we're speaking with Ali Farouk, one of the policy analysts here. Welcome to the show, Ali.
Thanks, Marty. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with me. And you focus on two issues. One is housing and the other is immigration. Let's start, first of all, with housing. What are the issues that the Interfaith Center is focusing on in the housing area?
Well, I'm sure that most people know that housing has been a big deal for the past couple of years. And we're focusing on one area that's really been missed over by federal reform. Recently, the U.S. Congress passed a lot of reforms, which dealt with a lot of the problems. But one problem it didn't address was the issue of mortgage broker accountability. Now, what that means is that sometimes when people are trying to buy a house, they may go to a mortgage broker. And a mortgage broker is a person who kind of shops around for them to find a good loan for them to buy a house, a good mortgage. Now, the issue with brokers is that brokers sometimes get kickbacks from different financial institutions when they bring to them a more expensive loan. So what that means is you go to a broker and you hire him or her to find you a good mortgage. They may then turn around and get you to sign onto a loan that is more expensive than one you might have been eligible for. Meaning, when I say more expensive, one that has a higher interest rate or one that may have a variable interest rate when you maybe have been eligible for a fixed interest rate, or one that for some reason has weird penalties and fees and things like that. Now, the reason they would do that is because they would then get a kickback from the bank or the mortgage company or whatever the financial institution was that was providing that loan for bringing them a more expensive loan. And these kickbacks are normally called yield spread premiums. And so what we're doing here is we're championing a bill in the Virginia General Assembly which would require mortgage brokers to act in the best interests of their borrowers and to do all their due diligence to bring them a loan that is in their best interests, all things considered.
And of course, we're all quite familiar with the mortgage foreclosure crisis that's hit this country and caused such harm nationwide in areas far afield of housing. What portion of the current crisis can we say is at least partly the fault of mortgage brokers who were doing what you describe?
Right. Well, that's a great question because some people may be wondering, well, is this really a big deal? Well, actually, mortgage brokers have become a bigger and bigger part of the mortgage industry. So, for example, a recent study found that about 45% of total mortgages were financed by, or not financed, but were brought to, were created by brokers. And about 70% of the subprime mortgages were connected by brokers. So brokers have been a significant portion of the problem. Now, I'm not saying that all brokers are bad, because there are many, many brokers who are, you know, good, honest people just making a living. So, for example, the patron of one of our bills, Senator Donald McKeeshan himself, has a broker business. But there have been some bad apples, and we're trying to fix the loopholes.
Now, that sounds good. And the other area that you're working on I believe you call it sources of income discrimination in housing. What's that issue all about?
Right. That's a little bit of a smaller issue and not as sexy, quote unquote. But the issue here is that, unfortunately, some people have trouble finding affordable housing if they have some sources of income, such as a housing voucher or public assistance. And, you know, one can say that they have trouble finding housing because the landlords don't like to rent to these kinds of people. So one of the things we were concerned about is, well, how do we deal with this? And originally we thought, well, what we would do is we would add as a protected class sources of income, meaning in addition to not being able to discriminate by gender or race or religion or anything like that, you could also not discriminate by sources of income. This one, we've done some negotiating, and instead we've decided to turn it around and instead provide a tax credit to landlords for allowing tenants to live at their place that are have housing vouchers and public assistance.
I see. So in other words, the initial plan was to, I guess, amend the fair housing law and just say, just as, you know, race, color, religion, family status, gender, disability is a protected class, so would source of income be a protected class.
Yes, exactly.
But now the plan is to do something a little bit different and offer tax credits if landlords rent to people using vouchers and things of that nature?
Yes, that's the plan.
Okay. The other issue that you are working on, of course, is immigration. And what are the issues there that are of interest and currently before the General Assembly?
Well, immigration is a very broad issue, and there are many, many facets of it that are unfortunately dysfunctional and broken. But I want to talk about one thing that we in the faith community are very concerned about, and that has to do with children. Now, one problem we've seen is that there are many children in this country who are born of undocumented parents who are either citizens or are not citizens but have lived the vast majority of their life here in this country, in America, and that was because they were brought here when they were very young.
Maybe like 2 years old or
exactly.
Something like
it
that.
It could be 2 years old. It could be 5 years old. And that so it's very often that they may not even know they're undocumented. They grew up here just like you or me. They went to public school, they graduated from public school, and then when they try to go to college, they find out, to their shock, that they are undocumented, and then they are unable to get in-state tuition. And so this has kept, you know, a lot of these children from getting to college. So what we want to do is pass a legislation that's been patroned by Senator Emmett Hanger. It's SB 1037, and it allows a small number of undocumented students to qualify for in-state tuition if they are Virginia residents and have been living in Virginia and have been paying taxes and are in the process of becoming lawful permanent residents. And this is just something to help kids achieve the American dream. It's something to help make these children responsible, productive citizens instead of pushing them into the shadows, which is bad for everyone. Because, you know, when you start pushing kids into the shadows, they're going to fall into all kinds of behavior that would be bad for everyone. You know, there's a lot of gang activity, unfortunately, that goes along with that. So that's, and also when you encourage people to go to college, it increases the tax base, it increases the workforce, and it's good for everybody.
And these are children, I gather, who have gone to Virginia public schools, K through 12, and we've invested a considerable amount of time and energy and money in educating them. Why would we not want to continue that process if they were ready, willing, and able?
Right, exactly. And there's many, many studies that show that the tax contribution of undocumented children of immigrants, you know, increases as they go to college and they end up giving back more than they took in. And it just makes a lot of sense economically. But from a faith perspective, it's that children are innocent. And in this debate, whatever position you might be on, you have to understand that children are always innocent in this debate and they should be protected and promoted to becoming responsible citizens and not punished, because that really hurts our moral character.
And I believe we, a couple of weeks ago on this show, we had Tim Freilich from the Immigrant Advocacy Project, who said that there was a Supreme Court decision that said that children are entitled to an education, K through 12, whether they are documented or undocumented, whether they are citizens or non-citizens. But apparently that right to public education really ends at high school graduation.
Right. There is a decision called Plyler v. Doe, I believe. I think it was in the 1980s. And you're exactly right. That is what the Supreme Court found. So there's a lot of legal footing for this, and we're just trying to make sure that we take the right, the faithful course in this debate.
And I believe there's one other issue that you're working on having to do with criminal investigations involving the undocumented.
Exactly. And another problem we found is that While modern policing has produced reductions in crime rates across the country in different cities and places that were, you know, had really bad crime rates several years ago, unfortunately, crime has been increasing in the immigrant community. And this is because some criminals have found out that certain people in the immigrant community are reluctant to report crimes and cooperate with investigations because they're afraid of having their immigration status checked or their relatives' or friends' immigration status checked. And that's really become an unfortunate reality because of the immigration debate we've had in different localities across Virginia. And so this has had a really chilling effect on communities because when criminals are able to operate without impunity, that hurts everybody. You know, a criminal doesn't check your ID status. He doesn't check if you have a green card or not. He just maybe looks to see if you've got a dark complexion and maybe an accent, and he's going to attack you. So all kinds of people are at risk. The greater community is at risk. And so what we want to do is pass a law that's patroned by Senator Janet Howell, SB 1436, that would protect the immigration, that would restrict the police from asking about immigration status of anyone who is cooperating as a witness or as a victim of a crime in Virginia. And this does not protect, this does not mean that the police can never ask for immigration status. It's only for a victim, a bona fide victim or witness of a crime. And that way we make sure that these communities are cooperating with the police, they're reporting crimes, and that way everybody's safer.
Now, I know that a lot of police chiefs and police departments really believe in community policing. I know in Richmond, one of the things that has contributed to sort of the dramatic decline in homicide rates and other crime rates has been an emphasis on community policing, and I would think gaining the trust of any community, whether it's an immigrant community or not, is key to that. What do you find is the reaction to police chiefs and police departments to the proposal that they just not be permitted to ask anyone who's a victim of a crime or a witness of a crime their immigration status? Do you find them supportive? Are they not supportive? Are they on the fence? What's the reaction you're getting?
The reaction's been very, very supportive. Almost uniformly, police chiefs and law enforcement officials are very supportive because the critical point in policing is when you can turn investigations into convictions. And that's where this comes in as really handy. And even in Prince William County. I actually grew up in Prince William County, but in the Manassas-Prince William County area, which was, you know, kind of became infamous over the past year and a half about their crackdown on immigrants, even Prince William County passed an ordinance that did this same thing. And what we're trying to do with this law is make it uniform across the state so that no one has to be afraid about what town exactly they live in. They know that they can cooperate with the police and report these criminals so we can get them off the street without having their immigration status checked.
And what do you see as the possibility of this getting through the General Assembly?
Well, it's very positive. This is its second year, and last year it came very close to passing. It passed the Senate unanimously, and it failed in the House of Delegates by only 6 votes. So we're really hitting those 6 people hard. We're really trying to gather a lot of support. We're being a lot more collaborative this time. And we think the momentum is on our side. You know, Virginians have roundly rejected the hostile and hateful debate and the rhetoric and the immigration debate of the past. They've come together and they realize that, you know, there's a better way through this debate. And so we feel very good about this bill.
I'm pleased that you're making such inroads and wish you the best of luck. We have been speaking with Ali Farouk. He is a policy analyst at the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. Thank you very much for being on the show, Ali.
Thanks so much, Marty. Take care.
This week's top 3 tips are about foreclosure. The first tip is that if you're paying for a house due to a mortgage or home loan, the creditor can foreclose upon or take back the house if you don't pay in full and on time. The second tip is that almost all mortgages in Virginia are secured by a deed of trust. A deed of trust is a deed of the property from you to a trustee who can sell your property if you don't pay the mortgage payments on time in full every month. The third tip is that in Virginia, foreclosures are done outside of court rather than through the court system. For Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Today is crossover day, when each house of the Virginia General Assembly may consider only the legislation passed by the other house. Join us next week in the second of a three-part series when LaTanya Reed, policy analyst with the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, discusses car title lending, as well as restoration of voting rights, and why disallowing the vote to convicted felons is bad policy and a shameful remnant of Virginia's racist laws. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrand.